There, I have no idea where I would have been. So, really, a great thank you to you, Jimmy. Thank you to Mark, and definitely thank you to the group. It's funny you kicked off with that step action group that we did last year, because that was really important to me as well. At the time, I was not on the beam at all. I feel like I must have taken my will back. Things weren't going well. My brain was totally scrambled. And just like in certain times in life, like when 4 and 5 and 8 and 9 came around, step action came around, and it really started to change some things, especially around the house. Me and my wife were on the outs. We were practically divorced. We were in counseling, and that was not going well at all, like the screaming matches and everything along those lines. And there was obviously she had her own part in it, but it was definitely me that needed the help, and not only through like counseling, through AA. I've taken additional steps to allow myself to kind of live a decent existence. The reason why I was going to bring that up is because we have a new joke running around the house. So when I was in college or college, I was really big into musicals, and I think it makes sense in hindsight. My favorite musical of all time was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I don't know why. Maybe because I felt that internal conflict on a daily basis. So we were listening to some Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about a story about my neighbor who stopped by. She was the one that randomly walked in my house one day. Luckily, I found her. And she gets a phone call while she's at my house, and she's like, "Terry's, I'm at Terry's house." And like, my name's Denny. Like, she's been my neighbor for 3 years. So our running joke now between me and my wife is, Dr. Terry and Mr. Denny. So when Dr. Terry is around, he does mindful stuff like buys flowers, fills up the tank when he doesn't, when he wasn't asked, and volunteers to go on the, to do the errands, versus Mr. Denny was the guy that just wanted to sit in the darkness, play video games, just be completely withdrawn from everybody and everything. So it's a really it's a really fun running joke for us to have, considering we had no running jokes and just periods of undealt with feelings for ourselves. So, but that step action group, really couldn't have helped me more, and really got me on the beam. And the last year has definitely been better. Speaking, of my early alcoholism, kind of wanted to share my experience, via the steps. Big bullet point guy, I kind of tend to ramble, lose my thoughts, so I thought that this was the easiest way for it to get done. So, step one was obviously one of the was the toughest, right? Admitted it, that we were powerless over alcohol. So first things first, I didn't really drink until college. I knew my dad was an alcoholic, my uncle was an alcoholic. I saw my dad go from a millionaire to living in poverty, and my ego as a teenager was like, that is never going to happen to me. So I didn't drink. I got to college. And in high school, I was kind of that jack of all trades with kids. Like, I wasn't popular, but I had a lot of friends. So it was a weird situation. So when I got to college, like, the first thing I did was like knock on everybody's door and introduce me myself. And I really got a lot of friends quick. I felt popular for the first time. So I ended up going to these parties, and there was drinking and everything, but still I was like, no, I don't drink. I don't drink. And then, one day I can still see it in my mind's eye. I'm in the basement, like with like a rock foundation, probably dirt on the floor. And this girl hands me a beer, and neither, I drank that beer. And literally 20 years was gone, you know, like there was, you know, obviously there were good times, you know, when I first started drinking, it was fun, you know, before the alcohol took in, you know, I put this combination between popularity and drinking, you know, so those are two things that I never experienced before. And both things like made me feel good inside, you know, so. Obviously, when it came to drinking and quitting drinking, you know, like losing that popularity was definitely one of the things that, you know, I thought about. And, you know, truth be told, since I quit drinking, you know, I lost a lot of hanging chads, you know, the people that were only around for the drinking experiences. The only thing we really had in common was we like to get blackout drunk. So, you know, once alcohol, you know, once I took that first drink, it was like my alcoholism was doing push-ups, you know, in the background because I just drank all the way straight, you know. I came in with a scholarship. I ended up losing my scholarship by the end of the year. Even people that were my friends in the beginning of the year were like, dude, there's something wrong with you. So, you know, when I moved home, I felt like a failure, you know, and that only made me want to drink more. You know, I wrote my college essay, you know, in alcoholic egoness before I even drank, that I was going to be president of the United States. Like, that was my college essay. I kind of did it as a manipulation because I figured that I would admit myself if it was a future president. But yeah, so when I moved back, you know, I was completely distraught. There was a guy that I, you know, that also lost a scholarship that I was friends with, and we just went off the rails together. You know, I don't like to do a ton of drunkalogs, so I won't. But you know, like some of the experiences that we had, it was just, you know, when two people get together and there's no off switch, you just keep one up in each other, and that's where it really was. Lucky for me, he moved to North Carolina, but I found my own group of friends, and of course. You know, they were cool too, which made me, you know, even happier. I'd walk into a meeting with, or a meeting, look at that. I'd walk into a party, you know, and they would be the cool kids raising their arms, and I was one of them, you know. So that made me feel good. You know, but I also started knowing that I had a problem, you know, like I wanted to drink every day. I knew that I was, you know, on the odds of me having alcohol, being an alcoholic. So when I was 20, I asked my dad if I thought if I was an alcoholic, because he was the guy that, you know, had done 10,000 meetings, you know, he sponsored hundreds of guys, you know, the leader amongst AA, you know, like, and then he just walked away from the program. But at the time, I'm like, he's an alcoholic. I think he can tell me if I'm an alcoholic. And he's like, well, only you can tell you if you're an alcoholic. Which for me, like, I wanted the answer, yes, I'm an alcoholic, not a maybe. I took that maybe and I ran with that for a while, you know. And really, like, drinking and driving wasn't really shunned upon, you know. It was actually with the group of friends that I was with. You know, we would do it every single day, you know, to every party. And you know, when you got your DWI, it wasn't even an insult. Like you would just be the next man up, you know. So if Dan got a DWI, we'd just drive his ass around for 6 months until he got his license, you know, and then Kevin did that, so on and so forth. So like even getting a DWI wasn't a, you know, a big deal. When I got my first two, which didn't help me, was the fact that it was over in 8 days. If you guys remember that Sam Maisling guy, sometimes good people make mistakes. I called that guy and, you know, I had a resisting arrest on it. I blew a 0.21 and it was down to a DWAI. Since I refused, I was off for 6 months. So what did I learn from that? Well, I learned my wife was pregnant with my daughter, so she could drive my drunk ass around for 6 months. So instead of something being a learning experience, I totally blew by it. I had a second DWI, and that one ended up getting thrown out, ironically. Not a lot of DWIs get thrown out, but the reason why it got thrown out, ironically, was because it was the only one that made the news. So that was the only time in my life I never had to call in sick, because everybody that I worked with saw me in the news. So, but it was definitely that it started heading me in the right direction. You know, like I learned nothing from number one. So number two, I was required to go to rehab, outpatient. You know, I was required to go to meetings, which, by the way, I didn't really like. And I took it seriously, and I think I stayed sober for about a year-ish until I ended up, you know, I ended up having, after the first heart attack, I ended up moving in with these guys. And then, you know, that's when I ended up, they drank a lot, and I didn't think it was a problem. You know, after the first heart attack, I didn't want to drink anymore. I felt good. So I moved in with them. There was booze everywhere, didn't faze me. I had some neck problem, and I like took a muscle relaxant. And out of nowhere, I'm like, you know what? This would be good to shoot down with. You know, a shot. So I remember I'm in the basement walking by this small little refrigerator on my way to pick up some, you know, do my laundry. And I just took a swig of it. And again, like nobody's business, I was off to the races. So that is what drew me to, you know, my heart attacks, which I don't know if I've, most people have heard about them. I've had a couple. But my first one was really, you know, the tough one. So after 34 years of drinking, of smoking, of eating buffalo food, I had a heart attack. I had a widowmaker heart attack. You know, I got four stents in my heart, and when that happened, it got me right. Well, when I had number two, it was the exact opposite. So the second one, it was like one of those situations where it's like, I'm just gonna die from a heart attack anyways. So like, what's the point of trying to do anything right? So I went on this bender, you know, like I was off my meds. The funny thing, I forgot, you know, I went off my meds in between DW or heart attack number one and two, because I felt like I read some stuff that alcohol tears up your liver. So my idea was that if I drink for another 10 years, those 65% clogged arteries will only be like 75%, because I drank for, you know, 30 years and it got 65%, which I was totally wrong with. But that's the insanity of drinking. Like the poison in my head was telling me, save your liver, save your liver. Like your heart, which you need to function, was not even part of it, you know? And I always look back on that. And that's why I look at it, you know, even though when I came in here, I was against the allergy, I kind of landed on like poison, which it technically is, because it puts thoughts in your head, logical thoughts like you would never ever think about. You know, like since I got sober, I have not even had one thought of cheating on my wife. You know, I used to put myself in those situations a lot. Like, why did you end up cheating on your wife? Well, you know, it's just like planning your next drink. It was like planning my next affair, you know? And a lot of it ended up having to do with the fact that I was, you know, insecure, you know, and I had a lot of self-hatred inside of myself. So, you know, that was like the logical next step. I did, you know, end up when I did end up having DWI number three, that was the one that got me into the program. So shortly before that one, I had reached out to my boss at the time. I was hungover, and you know, I was like, I know that you'd been in the program before, and I need help. You know, so his father-in-law was still in the program. He's like, call this guy. So the guy picks up and he's like, oh, I hear you're having a little bit of a tough time over there. You know, just had a heart attack, gonna have heart, you know, have a DWI, occupational problems. And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. You know, so like the guy's like, well, if you ever need any help, Give me a call. Here's my number. Needless to say, I dropped it. When I got DWI number three, I wasn't worried about it because back in the day, there was like a law in New York saying that every 10 years, like you get forgiven. Well, they got rid of that law like a month before I got my third DWI. So I was looking at a felony. So I was doing the next right thing to get myself out of trouble. So the next get myself out of trouble thing. And I did the rehab, I started seeing a counselor and everything along those lines, but I also started really getting into AA. Truth be told, it was twofold. My sponsor was really good friends with my boss. So like I always felt like no matter what, even if I wasn't getting that card signed by drug court anymore, like my job was kind of anchored to AA. So, that made it actually easier in the beginning. And I'm glad I stuck around because after DWI number three, which I really got out of pretty quickly too, I could have easily walked away from the program when I didn't need anything to get signed, but I truly didn't want to drink anymore. I knew that, like two, three strikes and you're out. I did truly want to live, even if I hated myself. So that was really my beginnings of AA. It was really funny because, everybody mentions their interventions. Not everybody, but there's been interventions around. My intervention was a work intervention. So essentially, I got sat down. It was my boss and my boss's boss. And they sat down and they looked at me and they're like, Denny, you're a problem. You're a problem for the team. You're going to have to take some time off. And I'm like, well, what is that actually going to look like? Like, are you going to send me to rehab? Whatever. And he's like, well, I got this guy that, I want you to talk to. He was really great. I want a trip. He let me go on the trip. The next day, I was off of work. And, I ended up doing, the 90 and 90. I got a good sponsor, but it still wasn't gone. Right after my 90 and 90, after I got welcome back to my job, I got a trip to California, Huntington Beach, probably the nicest hotel that I've stayed in my life, and I drank. And I put these people in this weird position because they all knew I shouldn't be drinking. I just almost had a heart attack. They didn't know really the whole thing behind it. I put this other guy in a position where I was asking him not to tell my boss. And that was just, and I just remember like in my drunkenness telling off this Christian veteran, swearing at him, telling him what I was going to do to help his territory. It was absolutely ridiculous. So when I got back from there, my boss found out. I told him. Then he found out really how bad it was and he demoted me. So me and my sponsor Dave were in the basement of Deerhurst, doing the steps and or at least just talking about the steps. And I was angry. A lot of my AA beginnings were a lot of anger. So I'm just yelling because I'm mad. I'm mad about the fact that I drank. I'm mad that I probably planned the drink. I'm mad that I got demoted. I'm mad that the guy dared to demote me. And he just looked me in the eye. He's like, what do you want to do? And I was at that crossroads. I could have turned left and walked away from AA, or I could have turned right and stuck around with it. And being as mad as I was at my work situation, for the first time, that wasn't part of the equation. And I really did make my decision at that date and time to really dive into AA and really start taking it seriously. One of my the HP was a really big problem for me when I was early in AA. Like the child of my youth was destroyed. And it also allowed me to throw in some chronic uniqueness. So, I had always been heavily involved in the church. I was a lector, I was part of CYO. I always had, this want for God, that God size hole in your soul. But What happened was I've been going to this church for years. It was the church that I went to as a kid. When I had a kid, I'm like, this is the church I want to go to. It was a little bit more progressive than the other churches that were out there. And it was almost a laughing stock of the because of it, So when they were closing churches, they decided to close mine, even though like it wasn't losing money. So I used that as a reason to walk away from, from God, which made it really easy to get drunk on Saturday nights. It gave me that chronic uniqueness, this religion thing is BS. Listen to this story and you'll totally understand, and I just completely had no involvement whatsoever. I'd say my spirituality was on the golf course, and that was as far as it was going to go. But in AA, you need an HP, right? So in the very beginning, and I know you've probably heard this before, my HP was literally a rock. I was sitting there one time and I was looking at that rock and I was like, you mother effer don't need to drink. Like, here's this inanimate object and it is not being controlled by a drink. And here is this, higher being. And my entire life was controlled by a drink. So and once that happened, it evolved to, my higher power being the group, my higher power being, my sponsor, my higher power eventually landed on, this universal, higher power. For me, religions are very similar. If if you chat GPT a summary of most religions, you'd probably come out with the top stuff. So I think that all, like religion in general is a really good thing. And, universally for me, allows me a relationship with that higher power. And that is really important too for AA is that HP for me, because, without having a higher power, a lot of the stuff that we need to do on a daily basis, pray, gratitude lists, things like that, go out the window. Plus it just ends up, allowing yourself to have something to depend on, to know that you're being taken care of. I mentioned earlier, like that I thought that the allergy was a cop out. I remember being in a meeting at How It Works and thinking about and sitting at a table, probably 300 years of AA experience, and here's me with 30 days. And I'm like, this allergy is complete BS. I'm like, this is just your way of getting out all the bad things that you've done, blah, blah, blah. Well, I learned really quick, gladly, I guess, that that was not the case, 10 shares later. So what I do now, well, what happens to me now is anytime like the doctor's opinion comes around, that's just a really good litmus test of my sobriety. If I look at the allergy and I think that it's, bullshit, or I read it, and I'm just, it makes me restless, irritable, and discontented, I know that I'm not on the beam, But if I read it and I'm understanding, I'm exactly where I exactly need to be. That was a lot of step one stuff, for sure. Just jumping on step two. Like he came to find believe that a power greater than ourselves could return us to sanity. My chronic uniqueness, I loved it, I guess. Like I wanted to keep everything bad that happened to myself to use that as a reason. So once I found the HP, started gaining in my spirituality, the fog really started to lift for me for sure. Number three was really funny for me. It was definitely sprung upon me. The decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. We were just having a meeting one day and, we were like, okay, we're going to do step three this week. And we went into the children's room, like of How It Works, like the nursery. And we just knelt down on the, right next to this little kid piano, and we said the prayer, and it was like a weight was lifted off of me. It was tremendous. And reality though was that I didn't really understand it at the time. But it definitely helped me in the direction that the sins were my own. Four and five were really interesting for me too. My first inventory was really long, because I did it wrong, essentially. So, basically anybody that I had a resentment for, I listed. And at that point, any person, place, or thing was open season for it. So I'm like, just write it. I'm like, this stuff is fun, blah, blah, blah. So then I'm ready to go over it with my sponsor, and he's like, where's your part in it? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, where's the fourth wall or fourth rail? And I'm like, I, as always, bad at directions, had no idea what that was. So he's like, what's your part in this? So I just, dug my own grave. I just put every resentment that I ever had in my entire life, thinking that like I just needed to get off my chest and, be good. And essentially it led to a second inventory, it led to a third inventory. And then by the third time, I got it right. I try to stay as do my stuff, spot check inventories now. So when I do a four and five, what I'll see is that, it gets shorter and shorter. And then it also has random people pop up. When I lived in Florida, which is a story within its own, I lived with this guy, and I ended up just scanning back to Buffalo, leaving him kind of in the house alone. He was moving back to Indiana. He drove me to the airport. I didn't give him any money. I owed him for rent. He kept my golf clubs for him and sold them. But still, out of nowhere, that popped in my head. And, I had the ability to make financial amends to him. Earlier that day, that thought was not in my head. But that definitely was one of those situations where, for a decade afterwards, somebody that was my friend and really like looked out for me, I totally screwed over. So that was that amends was or was just something that just popped up on my list, that I would have never thought of the first time. My first, number five, I always find interesting. Anything done during COVID, I think, is interesting, because we literally did it, in his basement. We were 20 feet away from each other. We were both wearing masks. And it was just like, and it was also at the right time, So like when I mentioned the step action group earlier, doing this step at that time was another situation where I was just getting a little bit restless, irritable, and discontented. So, moving on to that was huge. When I got to six and seven, I flew through it the first time. Most people do, right? The second time I went through, though, they quickly became my favorite steps. The reason why is truly like a lot of the things we do are action steps, right? Like four and five, eight and nine, they're action steps, So for, three, for example, and six and seven, those are truly on your own, you only know if you've completed six or seven. You're ready for God to remove all these defects of character. You can't just read it and, expect for it to come. Fake it till you make it is huge, but if you don't have that portion taken care of, it's an issue. And then humbly asking him to remove your shortcomings, I came in here not wanting to pray, not wanting to meditate, not wanting to do an inventory, not wanting to do a gratitude list, and those are things that I thought I'd never do. But the reality is I still don't do a lot of them. I still, I need to do the gratitude list every morning. I've done a better job of laying in bed, keeping my brain silent, saying some prayers in the morning, saying some prayers if I jump into the hot tub. I have been a lot more grateful lately as well. Gratitude is always been something that, I've always ran away from, which is just entirely like crazy. I've survived two heart attacks. I've, somehow had three DWIs, didn't spend a day, 2 days in jail, along with many injuries, driving drunk 10,000 times, all these things, and I really, at the end of the day, the only reason why I made any of them was because, I had somebody looking over my shoulder, somebody still wanted me to be around here for, and for some odd reason, to not just wake up every single day completely grateful that your eyes opened is complete insanity. But that is exactly what how I live and lived, So now, like, if you live in gratitude, this morning before this meeting, I already had some cuddles with my wife. We jumped in the hot tub. She made me a nice omelet. There was various good things that happened before 9 o'clock in the morning. When I first started at AA, we would fight every Saturday after, after every Saturday morning. It got to the point where she would like go to pretend to sleep because like just my mind was wrong because I wasn't who, I guess that I was saying that I was. So moving on to nine, amends, was definitely one of those situations that I was the classic jump ahead. So I was probably about 2, 3 months sober, and my first wife divorced me because I was drunk. She gave me every possible second, third, 15th chance, and eventually, thank God for her, she kicked me out. But at the time, and I don't know if I wanted to get back with her or not. I really don't think I really did after the fact. But I did really want to make amends because I did know the hell that I put her through. But I wasn't working the steps, Like I didn't even have a sponsor, or anything along those lines. So I sent her a message and I'm like, "Can I take you out to coffee and talk about, what's happened?" And her first shot back was, "Get caught up on child support and maybe then that can happen." And I was like, "Ooh, that didn't seem good." So it was like, I did not do an amends for a long time after that one. My hardest amends was with my wife. I'd made amends to my moms, to my sister, to a lot of people, and I'd still yet to make amends to my wife. And that was out of fear. I don't honestly, like, we had had such a tumultuous relationship. I had done her so wrong, and it was so recent in my head. Even wrong, so like me wanting to talk about how she felt was not at the top of my list. And it really wasn't until the Step Action Program that, we had a true sit down and we discussed everything from top to bottom. And, it really helped us go from that place where we were definitely getting divorced to where, we joke about Dr. Terry and Mr. Denny, we joke about the fact that, we used to feel like my life was controlled by the moons and everything along those lines. So I'm happy for her that I don't have to live that way anymore, because why she stuck around, I don't know. Some people are just like that. Like I remember asking my buddy Tyler after everybody abandoned me, why he stuck around. And he's like, just the reality of the situation is I don't like to admit that I was wrong. He's the same guy that asked me why I still go to AA if I don't want to drink. And he's like, I'm like, I don't want to be an asshole. He's like, oh, AA is definitely not for me then. But like that's how it was. I had everybody kicked out of my life at that point. So when it came to and 10's really important for me too. So when you see that really for me take effect is Fridays. Fridays is like my hanging Chad day. I used to probably because I'd get drunk on a Thursday night, but Fridays used to be like a mean day for me. Like I would just be mad and mean all the time. And I would do stupid shit. I would send a stupid email. I would make a stupid comment. And all weekend long, I would just be sitting there like, am I going to get fired on Monday? Like, when's the next shoe going to drop? Everything along those lines. And always it was worse in my head than it ever had to be. And, if I would have had the ability to know that I could spot check inventory, I wouldn't do that. And every Friday, that's my goal. Every single Friday is to not, leave something hanging where there's somebody out there that I owe, an apology to because I bit their head off for some reason or something along those lines. And, I do that as much for them as I do for myself. Because, like I said, if I have that going into the weekend, it's just right here in my heart, it's right here in my stomach. And that's just going to affect everybody around me. So yeah, getting rid of those hanging chads, going into the weekend with the slate clean are definitely really important to me. So number 11, where we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. That definitely wasn't easy for me, like I mentioned earlier. And I still don't do it in the typical sense of the word. Like I kind of joked about earlier that like going golfing on Sundays is like my church. It really can be. If you're out in nature and the birds are chirping and everything along those lines, like it can be a spiritual experience for sure. Like meditation, I say is an issue, but I feel like I meditate every day. Like when I'm in the shower, I feel like I'm meditating. I take a bath every day, and I close my eyes and, try to get myself set for the day. So while it's not equally by the sense, as always, like it's done, it gets done. So, and, when it comes to when it comes to prayer, that's, I don't have, the foxhole prayers that I have. I obviously find myself praying for other people, but I really feel like it's more of a conversation than it is of a, those foxhole prayers that I had, But when I think about it, like I'd been having those foxhole prayers my entire life, like we were bankrupt by the age of five, and I didn't know what normalcy was with money until I started making my own, So like all the these situations that I'd been in that, led up to it, put me in that foxhole prayer situation. So I was always that foxhole prayer guy. Most of them out of need, but then obviously out of my own, out of my own accord, positions that I put myself into. So, now having a conversation with my HP, not asking, for things for myself, has really helped my brain for sure. And then lastly, a spiritual, this really might be the reason why I'm here. So I remember doing step action the first time at Darehurst and it being like at the end of it. So they were doing the traditions, but I remember them reading, the steps and just hearing, having a spiritual awakening of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. And practice these principles in all our affairs was just like earwigged me instantly. Like I, once I heard this, like it was a complete cheat code for life. I'm like, so you're telling me if I can figure out this AA thing, that I can figure out everything else that I know nothing about in this real world, and the answer is yes. When I first got on the beam, when you first get here, you have that pink cloud moment, everything, you're getting everything back. Life is good. I would, I felt I was glowing step 12, but when life starts, taking on its life, you find yourself forgetting a little bit about it, So while I'll pledge, keep your side of the street clean, which is what I try to do on a daily basis, that's when I'm practicing these principles on in all my affairs. So I like to, when I'm on the beam, I'm a lot nicer to everyone. I'm easy to get along with. I keep my opinions to myself unless I need to as well. And I try to be the actor, not the director. And that's really important to me because, for me right now, I'm my own boss. So like I had a really big issue in the beginning, with being the actor versus the director. Like, how can I be my own boss and not be the director? Like, there's the term director of, So when it took some real work to help understand that, to give your will to God, to give your will up, doesn't mean that you're giving up your business or you're giving up on life, and you're just like guided by destiny. It's the exact opposite. You get to live the life that you've always wanted to live. And that's, the steps for me and why I concentrate on them is because that helps keep me grounded. There's a few things that keep me grounded. Number one is in the steps. They all make sense to me. I know that if I'm, feeling restless, irritable, that it might be time to start, doing the steps and go from there. Because I do really feel like I'm a flight risk, and I know not a lot of people would think it, but just 10, like I like to live in the clouds rather than keep my feet on the ground. It's a lot more fun up there. It's a lot more easy up there. Probably why we drink. So if I don't have service involved in my life, I have great fear that it would be easy for me to walk away from the program. I think the earwig that I hope will never stop being an earwig is that my dad did 10,000 meetings and walked away and then died of alcohol-related dementia. Like that's my future. Like, if I walk away from the program, if I get away from service, that's exactly where I'm going to end up, no doubt. If I'm lucky, that's where I'm going to end up because living to 70, the way I was living definitely wasn't in the cards. So, yeah, when I got to AA, there was a lot of stuff that I had to, make right in my life that I never would have even started making right. And if it wasn't for the help of the group, if it wasn't for the help of the sponsor, if it wasn't for the help of the big book, and all three of those really working in combination, I wouldn't be alive today. My friend Sasha passed away this year, and he was one of the early people that got me into AA. He was young, he was cool, he had tats. He was in his 20s and we were on the golf team together. He was my boss and I would take like 3 hour naps. I would go to my wife's apartment and like take a nap from like noon to two, So like he knew all about my alcoholism. He was the first guy to help me think that like maybe I can do this thing. So I started going to some meetings with him, with Dewey, with another guy that's no longer with us as well. And he like planted the seed. Like I didn't stop drinking right away, but he definitely planted the seed. And speaking of all you people that have helped save my life, like he was the first guy ever that I could think of that, made me think maybe I don't have to drink every day. Maybe I don't have to do this anymore. And he was the guy that gave me hope, and even though he's not around anymore, I'll always think of him as the guy that got me to where I needed to be. And I wouldn't be around here anymore if it wasn't for him, And when we went to the wake, it was just people out the door that he had helped. And it was just so amazing. And, that's the power of the program. And that's the power of, people is that once you find your tribe, it's just amazing. So, almost to my time here, I love you guys. Jimmy, thank you so much for helping do this, set this up. Mark, thank you for everything you do, and everybody that's in attendance, thank you as well. With that, I shall pass.